Hey, welcome to the Cornerstone Church Podcast, one of the many places that we love to declare Jesus.
We see you in your life living a life of resilient faith for all of your days, and we believe that listening to this message is going to be part of strengthening your faith journey.
Enjoy the message.
So if you would turn in your Bibles to the book of Judges and the chapter 16, we are going to jump kind of right into the middle of a story that will be familiar to some of us and new to others. Judges 16, starting in verse 15, it says, "And she said to him," she being Delilah and him being Samson, "how can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these three times and have not told me where your great strength lies." So let me catch you up real quick. What has been going on is that Samson has an incredible strength that has been given to him by God, but he has entangled himself with a woman named Delilah, who not once, not twice, but three times before this moment has asked him where the source of his strength lies. He has given her false answers up to this point, but every time he gives her a false answer, she then tries to entangle him in that thing and brings people against him to attack him. I, for all of my years of study and years of knowing this scripture, can never answer for you the question after one time of her coming after you after the thing that you just told her, after two times of her coming after you after the thing that you just told her, after three times of her telling you the thing that you just told her and her using it to come after you. Why is there even an opportunity for a fourth time? But a fourth time, but you go back to the same things that entangle you. You return to the same places that have trapped you before. You return to the relationships that are no good for you. You return to the substance that has been no good for you. Why is it that not after one time, not after two time, not after three time did you walk away, but a fourth time you find yourself returning? Just like Samson, he returns to Delilah and she goes to ask him a fourth time. And it says, continuing in verse 16, "And when she pressed him hard with her words, day after day, and urged him, his soul was vexed to death." Say, his soul was vexed. "And he told her all of his heart and said to her, 'A razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. And if my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak like any other man.'" What happens next is predictable because it is what Delilah has done the other three times he has given her information. She takes this information, shaves his head, and this time he told her the true thing, and he is captured by the Philistines, the people that he is meant to be overcoming on behalf of his people. Overcome him. I want to speak to you today for the next few minutes together from the topic, gifted but unhealed. Gifted but unhealed. You can say to somebody close to you, if you feel so inclined, "My gift is not my issue." See, your gift is that thing that God has uniquely equipped you for. Your gift is the thing that tends to work for you no matter what the circumstance is. Your gift is the thing that just kind of shows up for you in life. There is something that you are uniquely called to, something that you are uniquely equipped for. And the thing about your gifting is that sometimes we don't even recognize the gifting that we have because it's just always kind of worked for us. Everywhere you go, everybody wants to be your new best friend. You're just gifted at connecting with people and building relationships. It doesn't matter what business you start, it's going to succeed because you're gifted at building businesses. You're gifted at when you open up your mouth, other people listen. It barely matters what you say because your voice calls people into attention. You're gifted at seeing the details and the patterns and recognizing the way that the pieces fit together. You're gifted at feeling something in your heart and being empathetic and moving with compassion towards others. You're gifted at when you sing a song, the atmosphere just starts to move around you because you have a gifting for it. You have a gifting for knowing how to set something and design something in such a way that it draws other people's attention. There is a gifting that has been placed on the inside of you. And the thing about a gifting is that your gifting just tends to work. Your gifting tends to show up for you. I think about Joseph, who everywhere that he went, his leadership gifting showed up for him. It doesn't matter if you throw Joseph in a pit and sell him off to a foreign land. It's not going to take very long. And Joseph is going to be the second in command. If he's in the prison or if he's in Pharaoh's courtroom, Joseph has a gift for directing things. Joseph has a gift for knowing where things ought to be and who ought to be in front of them. Joseph has a gift for speaking wisdom into the ear of the one in charge. Wherever he goes, Joseph's gift is going to show up for him. Now, the thing about a gift is that a gift tends to work whether you're directing it in a positive direction or not. Your gifting is not limited to working in the ways that God intended. Your gifting just kind of works for you. I think about Paul, who used to be called Saul. He was a man of passion and a man of zeal and a man who, once he sunk his teeth into something, was not going to let it. It was his gift to get his mind set on a thing and devote his whole life to it. And his gift showed up for him when he was determined to eradicate this thing that he thought was the antithesis of what God wanted. His gift showed up for him when he was determined to take out anyone who said they were a believer and a follower of Jesus, because this is the way that he deemed proper. And his gift showed up for him until God interrupted and said, "This gift is getting you in way too much trouble." A lot of parenting is just talking to your kids about the way that their gift is getting them in trouble. And a lot of parenting is ensuring that we learn to direct the gift without diminishing the gift. Because when we are undeveloped and underdeveloped or wounded in our soul, our gift still works. But it moves us in the wrong direction. Samson's story is a story of continually having his gift show up and his soul make the wrong decision. Time after time, Samson gets himself into scenarios and situations where his soul is so wounded and his soul is unhealed and his soul has been vexed in a way that it thwarts the direction that he's moving in, but his gift always shows up for him. No matter where Samson is, when he needs that strength, the Spirit of God comes on him and his gift makes a way. The trouble with your gift always making a way for you is that we can be fooled into thinking, because my gift is working, everything is fine. Because when it's time for me to show up in that business meeting, everything comes together, then I think that everything is okay because the deal came out the way it needed to. That doesn't mean that you're okay in your soul. It means that your gift is doing what your gift does. But at the end of the day, the thing that moves us and the thing that conditions us is what is happening in your soul. And we are often unhealed in the place of our soul. And so our gift shows up, but on the inside, we still need the affirmation that comes from you validating the gift that I have. At the end of the day, we're still drawn after desires, and we're still drawn after tastes, and we're still drawn after preferences that come from an unhealed soul. At the end of the day, we're still chasing things that were never intended to be the source of our assurance or the source of our comfort or the source of our sure-footedness, because it comes from an unhealed soul. And Samson did not first get himself in trouble with Delilah. This thing has been rolling for a few chapters and a few verses and a few decades of Samson's life. The trouble with an unhealed soul, the trouble with an untended to soul, is it starts off with what seems like a minor infraction. But it has a way of growing over the years, and it has a way of building over the years, and it has a way of picking up momentum, and the fractures to the internal you have a way of continuing to grow as the pressures of life push on them in such a way that before you know it, you're laying with your head in Delilah's lap, giving her your whole heart. Giving your whole heart to the people that you were intended to come against. Giving your whole heart to the thing that you were intended to overcome. Giving your whole heart to the place that God had for you to be an overcomer of. And instead, you are laying in its lap. See, Samson's story, you can read the whole thing for yourself in Judges 13 through 17. But Samson's story starts out that a child comes to his father and mother, an angel of the Lord comes and tells them how to raise him and that he will be gifted by God. And then the next thing we see is Samson as an adult, and he's in this scenario where he is now ready to be married. And there are kind of 2 to 3 stories interwoven together. He says to his father, "I've seen a woman that I want. Go get her for me." The trouble is that the woman is of the Philistine people, not of his people. And these are the people that he is intended to combat on behalf of his people. And so his father and his mother say to him, "I don't think this is a good idea." But he says, "I've seen her. I've looked at her. I like her. I want her. Go get her." That's my interpretation. But it's basically like that if you read it for yourself in the New King James. But also somewhere in the midst of this story, it says that Samson is out walking one day by himself, and a lion comes to attack him. And thankfully, Samson's gift shows up for him, and he overcomes the lion. It says he rips it in two. It's a very graphic story, and leaves the lion there. And then for some reason, he's back a couple of days later, and on the inside of the carcass of the lion is growing a beehive that has now produced honey. And Samson reaches into the carcass, into the honey, takes it out, and all as he walks along begins to eat the honey. Now, besides being a little bit gross that you just took honey out of a decaying lion's body, the readers of this story originally would have known that this is an incredible infraction on Samson's part. As a Jewish man and as a Jewish person of the time, to encounter anything that is dead would have automatically made it ceremonially unclean. Secondarily, he has been taking a Nazirite vow, which prevents him from coming into contact with any decaying corpse. But casually, it seems, Samson just reaches down and takes the honey from this decaying corpse and violates the covenant that he's supposed to be living in, violates the vow that he's been made, and begins to eat the honey. He apparently does not value the thing that he has been placed under. He apparently believes that his gift is so settled and so sure within him that the way that he treats it doesn't really matter anymore. And to add injury to insult, he takes the honey and then shares it with his family, with his parents, who don't know where he has gotten it from, and involves them in his situation of stepping out of the divine order that God has placed him inside of Samson's soul is a deception to where things have come from, is an arrogance about his ability to work and to act in his own gifting. Inside of Samson's soul is a casualness with the gift that God has placed on the inside of him that shows up almost immediately. Inside of Samson is a taste for things that are forbidden. He has a taste for honey no matter where it comes from. His desire to taste the thing that he wants overrides the convictions that he's supposed to be living his life by, which is evidenced by his eating of the honey and repeatedly evident in his life, because somewhere along the line, he has gotten himself a taste for Philistine women. And he tries to marry this woman. It goes terribly wrong once again because of his anger and his toil and the things that are inside of his soul. And we see Samson again in a situation where he is betrayed by his own people because he's become such a problem to them. And we see Samson again in the bed of a prostitute woman where he is then once again tried to be captured, but his gift keeps showing up for him. So it seems like everything's okay. And perhaps the worst infringement that indicates to us where Samson's soul is that it says that it seemed right to him. It says that it looked good to him. It says repeatedly that Samson looked and saw and it seemed good in his own eyes. The gift that God placed in Samson was never there to be determined by his own eyes. And the gift that God placed inside Samson was never there to be determined. Does it seem right in your own eyes? When we live in a place where we judge for ourselves, it seems right to me, so it must be okay. We walk in such a way where we look and say, in my own eyes, it seemed okay to me. I looked and I judged and I said, it seems right by my view. It seems right by my perspective. But there was a higher perspective that Samson was meant to be living by. There was a higher vow that Samson was intended. Living under a Nazirite creed was not just about following the rules and following the regulations and adhering to a system of guidelines. It was about having a consecrated heart before God. And Samson took both casually. And so he was gifted and unhealed. And the issue in Samson's life is never his gifting, just like the issue in your life is never your gifting. Your gift shows up when it needs to show up. Your gift will work for you whenever it needs to work for you. Your gift will happen whatever situation you take it in, because your gift is God's gift to you, and he doesn't take back what he gives. Romans tells us that God gives his gifts without repentance. It means without turning them back again. The issue for Samson is not his gift. The issue for Samson is his soul. And so he tells Delilah where the true source is, that the final straw that he has not broken of his Nazarite covenant is that a razor has never touched his head. And so Delilah goes and tells those who are trying to overcome him, I have it this time. And she shaves his head at night, and then she calls on the Philistines, and they come and they overtake him and they tie him up, and he becomes a prisoner of the thing that he was intended to be overcoming and battling against, and they hold him where he is then down to grinding the grain as a prisoner and as a slave, bound up. The thing that you are meant to overcome will enslave you if you do not learn to heal your soul. And then one day they're having a feast and they're so proud of how they've captured the mighty Samson and how he's been brought down to nothing. And they bring him out into the center of the court and they stand him up as a mockery and as an entertainment for everyone. And it says that Samson felt just enough of his gift returning to him. This is how this portion of the chapter ends. This is how Samson's story ends. In verse 29, it says, "And Samson grasped the two pillars that he leaned on which the house rested, and he leaned his weight against him, his right hand on one and his left hand on the other. And Samson said, 'Let me die with the Philistines.' And then he bowed with all of his strength, and the house fell upon the lords and upon all of the people who were in it. And so the dead whom he killed in his death were more than those who he had killed in his life." Samson comes to a place where he's standing there and he puts his hands on the pillars and he pulls for his gift just one more time, and he pushes to the place where the whole place comes crumbling down. And here is the picture that I started to see, that your gift will work for you in every situation, and your gift will show up for you no matter the circumstance. And even if it seems like it's gone dormant, the ability to muster your gift will always be there. But if we don't tend to our soul, your gift itself will crumble the whole thing down on top of you. If we don't take time to heal our souls, your gift itself will bury you alive in its wake and in its strength and in its might, because your gift has power on its own, and your gift has momentum on its own, and it's designed to be directed by a healthy, healed, whole soul. Don't let your gift overcome you. My concern is that we love gifts so much that we clap for gifts and we cheer for gifts and we celebrate your straight A's, and we cheer for how you can gather people around you, and we celebrate every business that you've started, and we clap for you all day long, and we cheer you on, but we never slow down to ask a simple question: how's your soul? What's going on inside of you, Samson? What's going on inside of you when you lay your head at night? What's going on in the quiet places of your life? I know your gift keeps showing up, but your gift is not what I came here for. I came to find out how you're doing on the inside. Your gift is not the thing that will save you. Your gift is not the thing that will redeem you. Your gift is the thing that, if you leave it untempered and you leave it undirected, will bury you alive. Too many of us are being buried by our gift, because we thought our gift was the thing to be tended to. And so we spend time learning how to develop our gift. We spend time getting a coach for my gift because I want my gift to be great. We spend time getting our gift in the right spot where our gift will really shine. We give our attention to our gift, but we don't give any attention to our soul. We don't give any attention to what's happening on the inside of me. We don't give any attention to why is it that I always feel like I have to have more? Why is it that it's never enough applause for me? Why is it that no matter how nice it is, I always find what's wrong? What is that voice in the back of my mind that keeps telling me that I'm not good enough? What is that thing? And where did I get this taste for these forbidden things? When did I even first taste honey that came from a carcass? When did I first step across that line and get more comfortable on this side of it than that side of it? What is it going to take me to begin to wrap my soul back in the healing power of His sweet grace? What is it going to take for me to heal myself on the inside and to begin to wrap myself back up on the inside? And here's the thing, you'll never do it on your own. Because the pull of the gift will keep pulling you back. But your gift will work for you. The gift isn't the issue. The issue is, how is your soul? A healed soul directing a God gift can take down the enemy. A healed soul directing a God gift will propel your life into places that you never thought possible. And when you stand there, and when you sit there, and when you win there, it won't be with this frustration, and it won't be with this pulling, and it won't be with this striving, and it won't crumble the whole thing down on top of you, because your soul is steady. Jesus didn't come to save your gift. Your gift is in you. He came to redeem you. He came to save your soul. When you get healed, when you get redeemed, when you get saved, when you get healthy, when you get a renewed mind, when you get a new focus, when you get a new perspective, your gift comes along with you. Because a healed soul can direct that gift. But an unhealed soul tends to be drug along by its gift. Colossians says this. It says, and you who were once alienated and hostile in mind. That word mind in the ancient text has to do with your inward person. It's very similar to the word soul. It's what goes on inside of you. We're doing evil deeds, but He has now reconciled in His body of flesh by His death in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach. He wants to redeem your soul. What I came to tell you today is that your gift will not take you out. Your gift will not bury you. That you are able to be fully, wholly redeemed by Him, healed in your soul, right in your mind, steady on the inside, directing the gift that God gave you with a clear conscience and a clear vision, moving in every space that He placed you in. And that I believe before we leave here today, some people are just going to step into a new weight of freedom, a new lightness of spirit that's laying down the brokenness that entangles you, that's laying down the thing that pulls your soul in the wrong direction, that we're speaking freedom and life over you. We're bringing it out of darkness and into the light and saying, God, every taste in me that's not from you, I want it to be before you. God, every desire that's in me that's not of you, I want it to be before you. God, everything that vies for my attention that's in me that's not from you, I want to lay it before you, God. Every wounded place in my soul, God, would you pour your spirit into that? Every hurt place and a harmed place, every place where I've been battered and bruised by life, God, would you pour your spirit into that place right now? I speak over you. Anyone who wants that prayer, just stand to your feet right now, because I speak over you that a fresh wind of his presence is coming. I speak over you that a fresh power is coming into you. I speak over you that there is healing. I speak over you that there is life. I speak over you that you are whole. I speak over you that you are free. I speak over you that there is a life, and life more abundantly. I speak over you that this thing is not going to take you out. I speak over you that you will live and not die. I speak over you life and life more abundantly. Just cry out to God on your own behalf right now. His Spirit is moving in this place right now.